Hey everyone, welcome to another special Your Amigos APCCC podcast. Tom and I are here in Lugano live on site. Great meeting, amazing, clinically focused and relevant meeting, and we're covering some of the major clinically relevant topics. And in this podcast, we're gonna talk about something that comes up a lot, I know, in my tumor board, is the role of radiation in advanced prostate cancer, both to the prostate, and then separately we'll cover the role of radiation to oligometastatic disease. And both of these areas, in my opinion, have sort of exploded in recent years with data. And again, we talk about this all the time in our tumor board. So why don't I turn it over, and I think we're gonna start with radiation to the primary.
Thomas, do you want to introduce yourself, then Pierre directly? Maybe let's do that right now. Let's do intros. Thomas, you go first.
Yeah, so thank you so much for this kind of invitation. Very great pleasure to be here with your amigos. So my name is Thomas Zilli. I'm a radiation oncologist in Oncology Institute of Southern Switzerland, working here in Lugano and Bellinzona with Silke Gilson. So the topic is really important, so because we started many years ago in looking at the role of local treatment, the primary, and for metastatic patient with the local treatment of the primary in order to have overall survival benefit for this patient. We had two important trials. One, the first one that was published was the HORA trial. It's the Dutch trial, randomizing patients with metastatic de novo disease, mostly with bone disease, to receive a standard of care treatment, so ADT combined in some cases with docetaxel, or the same treatment, but with the local treatment of the primary prostate cancer using radiotherapy. This trial show a benefit in terms of, especially for patients having low volume disease. And this was confirmed by another trial, so the STAMPEDE, larger trials, 80% of the patient receiving ADT combined with docetaxel. And the patient were treated on the prostate gland using two different treatment schedules. One was with weekly fraction of 6 gray, up to 36 gray, and the other one was 55. And the trial was overall negative in terms of overall survival to add the treatment to the primary, but this trial had a pre-specified post-hoc analysis on volume. And for patients having low volume, we had a benefit in terms of overall survival that was present after 3 years. We had around 7% of overall survival benefit.
Thomas, can you define volume for me? What do you mean by volume?
Yeah, so this trial were mostly based on conventional imaging, so it means CT scan and bone scan. And in this trial, we had a threshold cutoff for people, for men having up to 3 lesions on bone scan, and this were the patient having the maximal benefit in terms of overall survival. And the benefit was limited to this patient having up to 3 bone metastases. It was independent from the burden in terms of nodal volume. So it was.
But what's the reduction in risk of death? It's not statistically significant because it's a subset analysis.
Yeah.
So that's that makes me a bit worried.
Yeah.
So what is the benefit?
So the benefit for patient having low risk, low volume disease was. With a hazard ratio of 0.63, something like that. So it was a 40% benefit to add radiotherapy to the primary. But it was just selected for the patient having conventional imaging, that's really important, and were selected for the patient not receiving ARPI. This is an important topic because then we had another trial that we will discuss further with Pierre, that's just here, the PIS-1, in which a patient received also ARPI, so in this case, abiraterone, and this make things different in terms of results.
Pierre, do you want to just introduce yourself? The PIS-1 trial in this area really confused me. I'm quite easily confused, that's the problem, particularly in prostate cancer.
That's true.
What did the PIS-1 study show us?
So my name is Pierre Blanchard. I'm a radiation oncologist from Gustave Roussy, France, and so I work closely with all the PIS group that's led by Karim Fizazi for the It's actually the 10th anniversary that we celebrate this year.
We went out last night celebrating, didn't we?
We did.
Wasn't it? There was a cake and everything. There were fireworks across on the lake. It was amazing.
Over the lake in Lugano.
Well,
beautiful.
This is a bit of an exaggeration. there was a cake. There was a cake. Congratulations, by the way. I mean, a huge undertaking, incredibly successful, practice-changing, investigate-initiated trials. We don't do that enough in bladder and kidney cancer.
So after the two trials, trials that Thomas just reported, almost all the guidelines integrated prostate radiotherapy in the treatment of low volume de novo metastatic patients, which made sense, and not in high volume patients. And PEACE 1 is a trial that was published for one question in the Lancet 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It's a 2x2 factorial design trial. So there were actually two questions. The first one being the role of the addition of abiraterone in the de novo setting, whatever the volume. And the second one was the role of radiotherapy to the prostate in this setting. So
in low volume or in all comers.
Yeah. And after the publication of the Stampede and HORAD papers, there was a pre-specified analysis for the low volume population for the radiotherapy question. So which explains why the radiotherapy report came out 2 or 3 years after the abiraterone report, because they were waiting for Evans to arrive in the subgroup of low volume patients, which represent roughly half of the patients.
Did you change the statistical analysis plan?
No, it was changed to make the primary analysis for the radiotherapy question on the low volume population.
So it has alpha allocation, so statistically potentially significant.
Exactly.
Yeah. And low volume defined the same.
Defined the same. Defined using what's called the Charted definition, which dates back from Chris Sweeney's.
Chris, friend of the show, Chris Sweeney. Yeah.
Exactly. So. Unfortunately, this trial was. A bit confusing because
Sweeney's trial or this trial?
No. the PEACE one, because as you know, when you do a 2x2 factorial design, you have to first test that there is no interaction between the two randomization that you make, and there was no interaction for the abiraterone question, but there was one for the radiotherapy question. So they had to split this large trial into four small arm, so you lose a lot of power, and so that trial did not show a significant benefit that as was expected in terms of overall survival for radiotherapy to the prostate. So that the trial shed a bit of confusion on what was the standard practice, which was the use of radiotherapy in low volume patients, but it did bring some very significant important new messages. The first
just before,
one.
Just before we get there, what was the hazard ratio in the low volume concurrent radiation group? Because we heard in the previous trial, we heard that it was not significant, but the hazard ratio was 0.63. Was this hazard ratio 1.0, or was it also 0.63, but with really wide confidence intervals?
It's a good question, and I should have had the slides with me. The trial is not yet published, so I don't know the hazard ratio by heart. But when you look at the curves, you compare standard of care plus or minus radiotherapy, yes, the curves are really superimposed. Mm. And then when you look at the curve of standard of care plus ABI, the RPFS is a bit higher, and when you look at standard of care plus ABI plus radiotherapy, it's even higher. So there was no difference between the two SOC plus or minus radiotherapy curves. But when you added one treatment, you had an improvement, and added the second treatment, there was again an improvement, which explains why there was a statistical interaction, actually.
But why would the addition of ABI, like if it's not working without ABI, why would the addition of ABI make the radiation suddenly work better? That's the bit that always confused me about the PEACE trial.
So it's unclear. I don't know, and I have no good explanation to we need to be honest. So I have no good explanation for that. Maybe Thomas has one. The second thing that this trial showed, and that's an important message as well, that was true in low volume, but also in high volume population, is that one thing that we know, those patients, they can have symptoms when the disease evolves and when they get on CRPC and take later treatments. They can have pelvic symptoms due to the primary tumor that was left untreated from the very beginning. And so one of the analyses in this trial was to look at the severe genitourinary side effects or adverse events that would occur. And the trial clearly showed, and there was no interaction there, clearly showed the benefit of prostate radiotherapy in terms of reducing the amount of late adverse events, genitourinary, And there was no significant toxicity. And that was true in low volume. That was also true in high volume patients. So there's...
Those events were things like outlet obstruction, remember? Is that right?
Right. So it could be bleeding, could be outlet obstruction, could be the use of radiotherapy for palliative reasons. Okay. It could be, that's basically...
I mean, just to push back, I would think that if you're monitoring people closely, you can probably just intervene and radiate before they have symptomatic obstruction, rather than radiate everybody.
True.
Right, so I mean, I don't know if you were saying that's an argument to use it in everybody. It's sort of a side benefit, but not a primary reason to use it.
It's a good comment.
It's unusual.
It's however very difficult to predict the patient who could benefit from those treatments.
I think Pierre's just being polite, actually. Right?
and besides,
you don't have to be polite to the show.
And besides, it's probably less effective as a curative treatment rather than a prophylactic treatment. So that's the two limitations that I would make there.
What are the side effects of radiation therapy in this setting? We talked about the upside. There must be a downside. What are those?
So normally in this trial, so we had very few severe events related to the radiotherapy. So we had less than 2-3% of grade 3 toxicity, mostly rectal, if I'm not wrong. So globally, it's well tolerated. So I think one of the questions that we had today at the APCC is, which is the right dose that we should deliver for this patient treating the primary? So because, of course, we can use non-curative doses as HORAD, Stampede, and even PIS-1, because we treated the patient with 74. Mm-hmm. It's lower than standard doses that we are using today. And today, the voting was split in two. So there was half of the panelists voting for increasing the dose, like in the curative setting, and half were mostly based on the evidence that we have. So personally, I'm mostly in favor to increase the dose as soon as this could be done safely. And in radiotherapy, as you know, we have very strict dose constraints that we need to respect. And by respecting these dose constraints, we can limit. But of course, this remains an open question.
Just to be clear, the standard practice is for low volume patients defined by conventional imaging, radiation to the prostate of whatever mm-hmm. safe dose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no real disagreement in the field about that.
No. Okay. And I would say that among the radiotherapy community, people use like definitive ablative doses and don't use the Nick James clearly explained that in the Stampede that was prepared like more than 15 years ago, they wanted to be really on the safe side and do not cause any risk to the patient or minimize that. And now we use standard doses for those patients. And that's what they use now in the next generation of Stampede trials.
So how in my clinic, everybody walks in with a PSMA PET scan. So how does this change based on PSMA PET?
So this,
another good question.
This is a very important question. So because it
important,
opens,
right. Not just good but important.
Yeah. So, I think this the use of next generation imaging opened the doors to the concept of comprehensive irradiation. Because of course, if you have a limited disease burden, so you can imagine to treat not only the primary but also targeting all the disease sites. So you treat it with MDT, all the spots that you have present on PSMA PET CT. And this is another field for which we don't have yet any evidence to suggesting a real benefit to do that, but we have main ongoing trials testing the role of standard care treatment that include also the treatment of the primary versus a comprehensive irradiation. So it means that you target with MDT all the disease sites that are visible on next generation imaging. This the Presto French trial, we have the Platon in Canada, we have a StarMet in Spain, you have Stampede 2 doing the same, but using conventional imaging as well. So
these trials are standard of care systemic radiation to the prostate, as we just talked about, plus minus metastasis-directed therapy.
Exactly.
It seems like, at least in my hospital, we're kind of already doing this, right? Like we're already doing this, saying, oh, there's only two mets on PSMA PET, let's just sort of radiate everything and put them on hormones. So
right.
Are the trials going to help us, or are people, if they're negative, people say, well, we'll explain them away and just keep doing it?
Yeah, I mean, I think people might change their practice if the trials are negative. I would say that, so I'm the primary investigator of the PRESTO trial, so that's the French one led by the Getuc group, and it's a 550-patient randomized trial. We so far have randomized 460. We had about 20 patients per month, so accrual will be completed before the end of the year, so that's a good thing. So as the primary investigator, I really believe that the question is open, there are very few...
The endpoint's overall survival?
No, the endpoint is the time to CRPC, because you need much larger trials to address the overall survival question. The STAMPEDE-2 has an overall survival endpoint, but it's... We'll see how STAMPEDE-2 accrues. It's going to be even more difficult now that they're just starting. So... Yeah, all of those new trials, they incorporate next generation imaging, which is now common. PSMA, Colline before, but PSMA PET CT. They have multiple interests. I think the first one would be to improve time to CRPC. The other one would be to be able to potentially cure some patients or to stop hormonal treatment, which is allowed in the PRESTO trial after 2 years of therapy. So you can have intermittent the treatment and potentially for a very long time if you have really ablated all the gross disease. We know that SBRT is very well tolerated, but we should not forget that some patients have vertebral body fractures in the long run, especially in the long run in prostate cancer, because it's not osteoclastic metastasis. You don't see the fractures immediately, as you can see in kidney cancer after SBRT, but you see them 1 year, 2 years after treatment. So it's a treatment that can have significant side effects. I think we need to demonstrate the benefit. And also we have Thomas said, there are multiple smaller trials, smaller compared to STAMPEDE, but all of them have initially agreed to pool their data. So we'll have, in a few years, close to 1,500 patients that would have been randomized, and that will look at the results.
So when we started this, we talked a little bit about primary radiation to the prostate, and we talked about inconsistent data, not statistically significant from overall survival, subset analysis, positive in STAMPEDE, but not the primary endpoint. We talked then about PEACE, and we bought the PEACE trial, and some inconsistencies there. But nevertheless, it's been adopted in this low-risk population as a standard of care with conventional imaging. Then Brian's come on and said, what effect, does that change anything with second-generation imaging, newer imaging? And you've now moved on to a different topic. When that topic is to say, you know, you're now talking about radiation of metastatic sites as well. Mm. But to answer Brian's question directly, it doesn't sound like new PET scanning has actually changed your opinion very much about the primary radiation.
I guess maybe just to state the question a different way, if somebody was 3 lesions or less on conventional imaging, you do the PSMA PET and they're 5, are you still radiating their prostate? Right? If the PSMA PET scan, does it count? If I ask the question right?
Well, it's a gray area. The STAMPEDE analysis by number of metastases clearly shows that it's a continuous. And the more metastases you have, the less interest there is in irradiating the prostate in terms of overall survival.
Yeah.
And that makes sense, because when you look at that, if the majority of the disease burden is within the pelvis and you treat that, then you can have a systemic effect. If the majority is outside of the prostate, then it doesn't make sense to treat the prostate in terms of overall survival. But remember what we said about PEACE-1 and potential benefit in terms of prevention of genitourinary
I think you're right, because the major problem is that it depends which is the goal of radiotherapy in the treatment of the primary. So if you are using just ADT, adding the treatment of the primary, you can expect to increase for low volume patients the overall survival. If you are using doublet therapy, don't change nothing in terms of overall survival, because even the overall survival of these patients, like in STAMPEDE, in PEACE-1, is longer than the patient treated with the ADT plus radiotherapy in STAMPEDE. It's almost 20 months or longer. So I think even if you are using PET-CT PSMA, the goal of the treatment to add the local radiotherapy is mostly for radiological progression-free survival, CRPC-free survival, to prevent serious GU events. This is the goal that we would like to achieve, adding local radiotherapy. It's not for overall survival.
So where I am so far is I'm kind of semi-bought into this radiation to the primary. I'm not totally, semi-bought into it. And I can see where you're coming from. It's not perfect data, but there's consensus and everyone's doing it, and so be it. We said PET scanning inevitably is going to cause a bit of creep into that, but that hasn't really changed what you're doing. But what evidence is there for SBRT for metastatic sites? So let's move away from the primary tumour, let's move to the metastatic sites. What evidence do we have that that's the right thing to do in any patients?
As Brian said, the problem is that the train has left the station, so many institutions...
My train's still well in the station.
Well, because you're in the UK, but in many countries, that's standard practice in most institutions, I would say, at least in patients with oligometastatic disease on
back?
PSMA.
So treatment of local therapy in metastatic disease on the whole hasn't been incredibly successful. So when you've got metastatic disease and you perform surgery or radiotherapy to those metastatic sites, they're not that many examples in cancer medicine where trying to cut out metastasis or irradiate metastasis is associated with a survival benefit. So with the sort of the null hypothesis should be it doesn't work until proven otherwise. Sure. So why has the train left the station?
I think that there are two reasons. First, the radiation oncology community is very enthusiastic about those treatments.
I'm very enthusiastic about Liverpool Football Club, but they're not going to win the league.
and also because in most cases, doing stereotactic body radiotherapy is very well tolerated, and so there are limited side effects, or not no side effects. Of course, I said it earlier, and so that's why many people were convinced that it was useful. The good thing is that we've done the trial. I mean, my trial is not over, but it's getting there. The Canadian trial is almost over as well.
Just remind us the design of this trial.
It's standard of care plus or minus radiotherapy to the mets, and it's up to 5 mets defined on next generation imaging. So initially it was Colline PET CT, now it's PSMA PET CT, and so it's very basic. And standard of care is ADT, RP, radiotherapy to the prostate. So it's a really relevant standard of care as of today, and same trial in Canada, same trial in the US, same trial in Spain. We'll have 1,500 patients randomized, and we'll be able to answer what we should do for patients. But I think that
if it doesn't work, will the train go back into the station?
It may. Thomas may disagree. It may, and I hope it will, because there's no point running those trials. It may also help select the potential patients in whom there might be an interest. So that's also, maybe it's just working in a subgroup of patients. And we can't just say we should include patients in trials, because very soon this trial will be closed. And the question is, what will we do, for example, at Gustave Roussy, my institution, once this trial is closed? And very likely we will do as in Brian's institution, we'll probably treat them with a total ablation, the primary and the mets, pending the results of the trial, because it's a kind of an accepted standard of care, although there is not much evidence. But last point, and then I stop my rant.
It's been a good rant.
Last point is that there is data from a small phase 2 study from MD Anderson showing that it's called the EXTEND trial, published by Chad Tang in JAMA Oncology, if I'm not mistaken. And that trial, in that trial, they've given ADT plus or minus RP, whatever, plus or minus metastasis-directed therapy. It was some patient de novo, some patient oligo-recurrent. It's a 90-something patient trial, so it's not a big trial. But it showed that patient could, and it was intermittent therapy, just 6 months of ADT, that patient treated with SBRT had a longer time after testosterone recovery without a new salvage treatment. So there might be also interest in terms of quality of life of those patients to prolong the duration of the pause after intermittent therapy in those patients.
Brian's having kisses at the moment. He's dying to come in.
Well, by the way, Chad was a golden ticket winner to our first Your Amigos conference.
All
these studies are using five, as it sort of seems to be the somewhat arbitrary but reasonable cutoff. Is that right? I'm asking the question. Yeah. Okay. And in Chad's trial, it seems to me that if you radiate some lesions, of course that's going to delay things, right? Because it's going to delay the radiographic progression because you've treated those lesions, right? Yeah. So it sort of seems to be self-fulfilling to me. Like, you're making the scan better, but I'm not sure you're making the patient better. And that's why I'm a little worried about not having a survival. I understand one trial would be big, and maybe the combined analysis will do it. But is delaying...
Thomas, do you want to shout Brian down now?
Yeah,
because he's having a go at the whole of radiation oncology, as far as I can see. And that was a great opportunity. I mean, that wasn't such a great question, surely.
Anyway, coming back to the chat trial from MD Anderson, I think what is important, okay, you can prolong PFS, but you can prolong also the time off hormone therapy. So it means that you can decrease the side effects that you have combined associated with hormone therapy. So I think that even in the de novo setting, because the MD Anderson trial was for the oligorecurrent mostly. So I think that, okay, the goal will be finally to improve overall survival. This is the final goal that we'd like to achieve. But you're right. So I think that if we can postpone, if we can, in this concept of de-escalation that we are exploring now, so we have a de-escalate trial from URTC, if using SBRT and treating, targeting all the disease sites, we can stop after 2 years, 3 years, the ADT systemic therapy and to prolong sometimes the pre or off hormonal therapy, that could be useful for our patients, I think. So we have many endpoints that we can achieve doing that.
Brian's got to say another endpoint.
I try to get him back into good graces. To me, that's the biggest rationale. Like, that's the biggest benefit, is there's going to be a subset of patients with oligometastatic disease that you can treat intensely, hormones, radiation for 2 years or whatever. 2 years seems to be the arbitrary standard. And then I think there'll be patients who are cured, right? We hope, right? We don't know, but there's going to be a percentage that's greater than zero. I hope that patients who are cured, and that's a tremendous benefit, right? Not if it's 2%, but if it's 10% or whatever the number is.
So I'd like an example of a patient right now with oligometastatic disease who you would give radiation to the primary tumor and the metastatic sites. I'd like an example of another patient where you'd give to the primary tumor alone, and then a third patient that wouldn't get any radiation therapy at all with advanced disease. Thomas, do you want to start with the first of those patients, the one that's going to get both? Classic patient.
So the first one?
Yeah, who would get primary tumor and to oligometastatic disease.
Which is my standard of care, so what am I doing? So I'm treating with standard of care therapy, so it means ADT plus RP in these cases.
Yes.
And I try to target the prostate, the pelvic regions, and also the disease sites.
What's the PSA of these sorts of patients? You know, is it a PSA of 200, 500? Does it make any difference?
But it depends. So if you are staging this patient using PSMA PET-CT, so now all high-risk patients in Switzerland are staged at the beginning using PSMA PET-CT. So, and if you have some doubts, we combine also.
When you say high-risk, what is high volume? What does high-risk mean?
High-risk, so Gleason score 8 or more, right. T3, so the classical high-risk. Yep. So the patient that just a stage using MRI, and then we completed doing a PSMA PET-CT. If you have oligometastatic disease on next generation imaging, in selected cases, we try to discuss this compressive irradiation at the moment. So if you have a single spot, we're adding, of course, we don't have the evidence, but we're treating this patient using standard care systemic therapy, that's mandatory.
Yeah.
And we try to extend our radiotherapy field to include all the disease sites.
And
no strong evidence, I agree with you.
Yeah, come back to the other side, the patient who comes in who's definitely not getting radiation therapy.
So the one who's not getting it is the patient who has symptoms, high burden of metastasis. So those patients, they have a PSA of 200, 500 more. When you do the bone scan, there are lots of spots. If you were to do a PSMA, you would see lots of spots as well, but the PSMA probably does not provide any meaningful additional value there. So you would just do systemic therapy in those patients. The gray zone is the intermediate patients in between the two situations that Thomas presented. And in those patients that would not qualify immediately for radiotherapy to the prostate, what we commonly do at Gustave Roussy is that they're started on systemic therapy, and they're evaluated at 6 to 8 months for PSA response. And if they have a very deep response, very good response, then usually we complete, we add radiotherapy to the prostate to have a good package of treatment for those patients. So we probably select the ones who will be long responders. Is it the good ones?
So we're not sure. Delayed radiation therapy.
In the high risk, in the de novo high risk, high volume patients, yes, because it's not standard of care to do it for all patients. So we select the good ones that way. Is it the right way to select them? It's not sure.
Is it possible to go to Institut Gustave Roussy and not get radiation therapy?
that looks difficult, actually. But
go ahead. I was going to ask, maybe just to finish up, are these trials and are you in practice routinely stopping at all hormone therapy at 2 years, or is that practice all over the place?
So personally, if we treated with a comprehensive irradiation beginning after 2 years of doublet therapy, yep, comprehensive irradiation, if you have an undetectable PSA, we try to stop and to observe what happens.
Yeah, I agree, and that's allowed in the randomized trial.
It's not mandated.
It's not mandated. Okay, it's up to physicians. Some patients don't want to stop.
Yeah, sure.
And the last situation that we did not discuss at all about, but maybe we want to give a small discussion there, is the metachronous population. So those patients who relapsed 5 years, 10 years after local treatment, prostatectomy and or radiotherapy. Those are the patients that we really feel the MDT would be useful because it's a different biology. It's a much slower evolving disease. And probably in those patients, sometimes we could also just do radiotherapy and not systemic treatment and see how that goes. Although it's a bit off the recommendation, the guidelines say...
Most people give systemic therapy plus or minus.
And you could give shorter course of systemic therapy and MDT and see, or even
six months.
And see what that...
That is more intermittent concept. So I think we move from the first PocMet, so we'll suggest MDT alone, to the PocMet 2.0, so associating systemic therapy to MDT.
And what's the data support that kind of metachronous approach?
But we have this data coming from the MD Anderson with the extend trial, suggesting that if you randomize patient to hormone therapy, so ADT with or without RP, or the same treatment concept, but you add MDT, you can prolong PFS, you can prolong the time off therapy, hormone therapy, and this is the concept. Then we have a lot of clinical trials running now, and I think we will have many answer to the different questions that we have at the moment. So
similarly, I mean, that's a subset of a 90-patient trial, right? So similarly, you're kind of doing it, waiting for the data.
Yeah.
You know, doing it now, waiting for the data, which may or may not convince you to not do it.
But finally, the majority of the settings, if you add the 6 months of hormonal therapy or 9 months, it depends what you want. So this is an intermittent concept that then you just intensify adding MDT. So if the patient responds well, okay, you can stop, you observe, probably you can just prolong. Otherwise, okay, you start again the systemic therapy. So this, you can see just differently the role of MDT as we had before as a curative intent. It's just changing, I think. We will like to achieve different goals.
What proportion of patients who you're intervening in with radiation therapy for oligometastatic disease, what proportion of those patients end up not on any therapy 3 years down the line?
I think, it's especially in the metachronous setting, so it's really heterogeneous.
So no one knows.
So I think
1%, 5%, 50%.
But funny, I think if you have sometimes you can have a 20% of complete response with MDT alone at 2 years. So you have a patient that you can be rendered to without evidence of disease, with a complete PSA control. Mm. This data come from a Canadian trial, but we're just
the small numbers again.
Yeah, 74, a small study, but there were patient negative on conventional imaging with up to 5 lesion PSMA PET CT. If you treat all the spots using MDT alone, 20% of patients were with undetectable PSA at 2 years. I mean, that's quite good, I think.
So you would assume, obviously, layering on 2 years of hormones, that number is going to go up.
Pierre, it sounds to me like your trial's important.
Thank you, Tom. We'll see. Hopefully, yeah.
Look, this has been magic. Just to summarize where we are, if I can, I think we kind of agreed that although the data was a bit sketchy, that radiation therapy to the primary tumour is adopted, and the consensus is we're giving it to those low-risk patients. And we're happy with that, and there have been two randomised trials. There's some inconsistency. And then this second piece, which is probably more, is it fair to say more exciting? Do you think it's more exciting, this radiation to metastatic sites, which has been adopted, the train has left the station, I'm finding it impossible to get it back into the station. But we haven't yet seen those randomised trials, but we're expecting great things, and we hear that there are potentially some patients who are not just delaying progression-free survival, but actually could have treatment-free survival, which is a really exciting concept, and maybe Stampede 2, maybe even overall survival by including radiation therapy on top of where we are.
Exactly
right.
Fabulous.
Pretty good summary.
Unusual for me. Yeah, they're normally very long and dull. Look, I'm loving it. It was fabulous. See you soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye.